Well, good morning. It's time for us to begin. I'd like to welcome everyone here to our period of Bible study at Jordan Park. Those that are in the classroom upstairs and those that are online, we do extend you a welcome. I'm glad that you're here and glad you're joining us for this study. We're in the third and fourth chapter of the book of Ruth. We're going to continue the lesson that was presented to us Wednesday by King David, who described the events leading up to Ruth and Naomi being back in Bethlehem after having been in the land of Moab. And before we start in continuing the study, I'd like to take a few minutes and talk for the benefit of the younger ones, particularly, about my first exposure to the story of Ruth. It was unintentional. When I was growing up, spent a lot of time around my cousins, particularly my dad's nieces and nephews. We went to school together. We went to church together. We spent our summers and weekends working on the farm, which was right where they lived. And my dad was the last of his siblings, the youngest. I am the last of my siblings. So all of my cousins that I'm talking about were quite older. When they're 20, 22, 24, I am 6, 8, 10 years old. So they're in the prime marrying age. And my role at these weddings that we seem to be having all the time was, you guessed it, Frodo, the ring bearer. Now, if you know the story of Frodo and the Lord of the Rings, you know that Frodo has, for motivation and for guidance, a guy by the name of Gandalf. And Gandalf says to Frodo, if you do not carry this ring, we're all going to die. I had, for my motivation and my guidance, Mama. And Mama said to me, if you don't carry these rings, we're not all going to die, but you might. So, here I am at my first ring-bearing gig. And you're used to seeing me on the skyline of any group shot. But in this one, I'm not. I'm down here. Notice the little dinky pillow and the little frilly lace all on the edge of the pillow. And the picture's not that great, I'm sorry. But right there in the middle of the pillow are two rings pinned right to the top that they did not even use. So, needless to say, I got to do this a lot. And I got really good at it. So much so that I knew everything there was to know about how a wedding is supposed to be done. So here's what goes on. We all line up in the front. We wait for the bride to come walking down. The preacher says, you really want to do this? And both of them have to say, I do. And then the preacher preaches a sermon. And we have a prayer. After the prayer, my siblings and my cousins and the friends of them have a little group. They all get up and stand in the back of the auditorium, and they sing this song. Whither thou goest. That's right. They took Ruth's words to Naomi in the first chapter of Ruth and put it to music. And to the best of my knowledge, someone also passed a law. And that law was, if you're having a wedding, you're singing this song. Because it was in every wedding I had anything to do with. Later on, I believe, well, let me get back to that a minute. I heard this song at every wedding, at every rehearsal, at every time the friends of my cousins and siblings and my cousins and siblings got together to practice this song. I knew it backwards and forwards before I could even learn to read. Later on, somebody must have amended the law because it was decided it was okay if you not only led this song, but you could lead any song by John Denver. One or the other, maybe both, was okay if you were having a wedding anytime in the 70s, early 80s, because trust me, it was a thing. So I am, later on, in a Bible class. My cousin, who was in the photo getting married that I had up there earlier, is teaching. And it's in the book of Ruth. So I'm reading down in the book of Ruth, and I get down to those verses, and I go, there it is. There's that song. I had memorized three verses in the book of Ruth and had no idea. In the class, I say to my cousin, hey, that song we had in all of y'all's weddings, it's right here. It's in the book of Ruth. He looked at me and said, well, yeah, that's where the song comes from, silly. Now, he calls me silly, not because he's mean, but if you have your cousins teaching Bible class and you say something ignorant, you're going to get called silly instead of something else not nice, like doofus or knucklehead. But that's what he meant. That was almost 50 years ago. Not that they were married. Not much less than that was the Bible class where I pointed out that that song was from Ruth. I have yet to get an answer to the question as to why a song about two women saying something to each other ends up in a wedding. But I think I was asking the wrong guy. Okay, on to the story. Now remember, Ruth and Naomi have returned from Moab, and they're broker than broke, poor. They have not much of anything. Ruth is doing her best to get them something for sustenance, for something to eat. And she tries to go to a field where they're harvesting the grain, and it just so happens she comes up to the fields of Boaz. This was not a guarantee. She could have come up on anybody's fields, but Boaz's fields was the ones she happened upon, and all she wanted to do was get the scraps, the stuff that fell to the ground after they were harvesting it. Boaz meets Ruth. Boaz shows great sympathy and is very gracious to Ruth and sends her home that day with a bunch of grain. When she gets back to Naomi after that day in the fields, Naomi recognizes the name of Boaz. And here's the relationship of the way things worked in the families back then. If a family member has to sell his property, he sells it, and it can only be purchased from a family member. If he has to abandon it and it goes unsold, it can only be taken by a family member. Because God said in Leviticus chapter 25, says, "The land is mine, not yours. I give it to you to have. And if for some reason something happens to you, a family member is responsible for taking it and keeping it in the family." So, I'm hitting the wrong button. Sorry. So, Naomi identifies Boaz as a person who could buy back the land of her husband and marry Ruth. And according to the law, Boaz or some family member is supposed to do this. Now, Naomi instructs Ruth and tells Ruth, "Go back to Boaz and explain this to him. But first, clean up. Put on your finest clothes that you have." I don't know how fine those clothes could be. They were not wealthy people. "And go to him. He is going to be at the place where they take the grain off the stalk and off the head." And the Bible refers to it as the threshing floor or the winnowing floor, where this is where they remove the grain. This is where they process the grain. I don't know how she knows this. The Bible didn't reveal that. But she knows that's where he's going to be. "You go to him, but you wait. Do not approach Boaz until he's done working. He's had something to eat, and he has found him a place to sleep." Ruth says, "Yes, I will go." So Ruth is approaching the place where Boaz is working. She does it without being seen. She waits until Boaz has gone to sleep and then approaches where he's lying and lies down at his feet. Now, let's put our modern sensibilities on this event. Okay? Is this a way to go about trying to get in touch with somebody and tell them something? Think this is a well-advised thing to do? Our modern sensibilities say it's not smart. This is not how you do this. You need to tell Boaz something. Let's tell Boaz tomorrow. Well, what is trying to happen here is Ruth is trying to get to Boaz to tell him, according to the law, Boaz, here's what you are to do. This is not something that is untoward. This is not something that is being surreptitious, seductive, whatever you want to have come to mind when you talk about this. Now, Boaz must be a heavy sleeper because she lays down at his feet. He doesn't wake up. It isn't until about midnight that Boaz stirs, wakes up, and hears somebody at his feet. It was either dark or he's groggy, but he doesn't recognize who it is. And he asks, who is this? And Ruth has to, it's me. It's me. Now, at this time, Ruth is going to explain to Boaz what Naomi told her to say. Naomi knew the law. Ruth possibly did. Boaz knew the law. Boaz may not have been aware that he had that relation that he could inherit the land, but according to the scriptures, Ruth is doing what her mother-in-law told her to do. Now, along with this land redeeming or buying back comes another obligation. The other obligation is the person redeeming the land has to marry Ruth to maintain the bloodline inheritance of Naomi's husband. Ruth just straight up asked Boaz, will you do this? There are a lot of folks out there, if you go out and study any of these events that are transpiring this night on the threshing floor, and they want to ascribe motives to Ruth and reactions from Boaz that have no substantiation in the scriptures at all. But we're going to go back to another song from the time, long time ago. In 1957, there was this number one hit by these two guys called the Everly Brothers, and the song is called Wake Up Little Susie. If you're too young, your parents might be too, okay? So ask an older one if you haven't heard it. But the song talks about a boy going on a date with his girlfriend Susie. And the deal with the parents is that you be home by 10 o'clock. Well, they go and they go watch a movie and they fall asleep. And the boy's waking up. And it's not 10 o'clock. It's not 12 o'clock. It's not 2 o'clock. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And he's in a full panic. Wake up, Susie. We're in trouble deep. And if you know the song, there's a line in there that says, what are we going to tell your mama? What are we going to tell your pa? What are we going to tell our friends when they say, ooh la la? Well, there are folks that want to put onto Ruth the same thing that Susie's friends are putting on Susie in this song. And it is not the same situation at all. We already have talked about the virtuousness of Ruth plenty, and there's more to say in the study. But what about the virtuousness of Boaz? Does the scriptures have anything to say about that? Well, yeah, we talked about it Wednesday night. Remember when Boaz first met Ruth in the fields? When Boaz learned about the background and learned about the story of where they had come from Moab and have come back. And by this time, Naomi's old to do much, if anything. And Ruth is in the fields just trying to get something so they'd have something to eat. What is Boaz's thought process? If he is the wealthy leadership kind of mind who has a lot of people under his purview, when he hears this story, what is he going to be thinking about Ruth? You're a foreigner. You have nobody here. You're by yourself. No one's to look after you. Not only that, you're trying to take care of your aged mother-in-law. Boaz says, Ruth, go stay with the women. Boaz already has the males and females separated in the fields. And Boaz says to Ruth, I've already told the men, leave you alone. Do not stray from these fields. His fields. Why is that? That's not the only fields out there. Boaz doesn't have them all. And not every male out there is working for Boaz. And he can't guarantee to Ruth, if you go off in somebody else's fields, what's going to happen to you. So he tells Ruth, stay with the women, stay here. And don't wander. When he shows graciousness to Ruth and he sends her home, does he send her home empty-handed? No, he sends her home with more than what she intended to come for so they would have something when she got home. Now, is every guy that's out in the field gathering grain a bad guy? No, they're not. But it doesn't take one to make a mess of the day. And Boaz is not going to have Ruth be the one to find out if one of them's a bad guy. He's not going to put her in that position. Now, here's another. And when he says this to Ruth, what's Ruth's reaction? She falls down at his feet because she looks upon Boaz as a maidservant would look upon a master. Okay? Just like if your master is asleep and I'm supposed to stay here and tell you something, I'm going to lay down at your feet, not beside you. Okay, now here's another experience I had personally to help with this situation. We went on vacation a few weeks ago. We went up to the Smoky Mountains, and we spent a week sitting in a cabin, watching it rain, and going shopping. That's not all we did. We did that a lot, though. But it was for Cherish's birthday, and one of the things Cherish said she wanted to do was go hiking, because this is Smoky Mountains. It's what you do. So I said, great. I've never been to Kleeman's Dome. Kleeman's Dome is on the Tennessee, North Carolina, one of the highest peaks in the Smokies. And there's plenty of trails leading out of Klingsman's Dome. And one of the ones that Cheris found was this trail to a place called Andrew's Bald. Andrew's Bald is nothing more than a grassy clearing on the face of the mountain, and there's quite a view off of that bald. So we start here at the trailhead, and we just head due south to Andrew's Bald. Cheris says to me, hey, it is a moderately difficult trail. I'm okay, it's fine. I did not understand in the hiking parlance, moderately difficult meant you had to have the hiking agility of a billy goat and the mass of a rabbit. I have neither. Okay? And she also told me that there, did not tell me, that there was an elevation change on the trail of about 800 feet on a 2 mile trail. We got from the trailhead to Andrew's Bald in an hour and 15 minutes. That's almost 2 miles downhill. Now we're at Andrew's Bald, and we're going back up. There's a picture of Cheris on Andrew's Bald, and if we was off to the right in the photo, there would be Fontana Lake, if you're familiar with the area. Beautiful, beautiful view. But 2 hours and 45 minutes was how long it took to get back. It didn't take her that long. It took me that long. For 2 days, I did not get into or out of a chair without making noise. Pushing up from my knees, grabbing hold to the table, armrest, what have you. It was, A few days later, after all of this, Cheris wants to go on another hike, but she feels really bad for putting me through the ringer on this first one. So, she says, Dad, found another trail. It's rated easy, and it's not as long. I had all the hiking I wanted to have on this trip. But what did I say to Cheris? Absolutely. Let's go. Why did I say that? Well, it really wasn't about me. It wasn't about my knees. It wasn't about what I wanted. We came here for her birthday, and she wanted to go hiking. And there was no way, no how, my daughter was going to go hiking on the trails in the Cherokee National Forest by herself. Are all the guys that go on hikes bad guys? No, not. But it doesn't take but one. And Cheris is not going to be the one to go find out who that one is. Okay? So, back to Boaz and Ruth on the threshing floor. Boaz says to Ruth, I'll do this. I'll redeem the land, and I'll marry you. But remember what time it is? It's midnight. Boaz is working. And he's the boss man. Do you think the people that work for Boaz is on vacation at Disney World? No, they're not. They're working too. Boaz is not the only guy that's going to be around that area. It's dark. And there is no way, no how, Boaz is going to send Ruth back to her home in the city in the dark. What does he say to Ruth? You stay right here. Come first light of the morning, go home. And, oh, by the way, here's some grain for you to take with you. We understand this? Is this making sense? When you read about some of this stuff that's out there, about what went on this night, it's not true. And it's certainly not fair to Boaz or Ruth. Now, Boaz also discloses something else. According to the law, the order of those that have the right to redeem the land and marry Ruth is spelled out in the law. And there's somebody else who has the first right to do this. It's not Boaz. He's second. Boaz has to have a conversation with the first person. Now, let me give you an aside. Here is a map of the Huntsville-Madison metro area. It's not a very good map, I apologize. But you can see 565 bisecting the map. So here is generally a ring around the Huntsville Airport. For your bearings, that's more or less Redstone Arsenal. There's downtown Huntsville, Alabama A&M, UAH, and here is us at Jordan Park. Would anybody venture to guess how many law firms there are within the confines of this map? Give me an idea. Now, don't say something silly like 10,000. There's not 10,000, okay? How many? Just 50? How many? 250. Wow. 240. 240 law firms, okay? Not lawyers. Law firms. I wouldn't even want to try to count how many lawyers there are. Okay? If you want to take care of your aged parents, you got to go see a lawyer. If you want to buy a house, certainly lawyers are involved. If you own a business and you want to tell your employee to tie his shoes, you better have seen a lawyer as to how to say it to him properly. That's the world we live in. And forget the law offices. How many of you have had to go down the road and put up with this? You know, if you can't see him once, here it is twice. You only have to move your head. Okay? And originality in advertising is very important in the legal community. They're all over the place. But here is my most favorite. This was in Atlanta, and I came across this. That's how you know you got you a good one. It has no hair. But this is how we are. This is how we are today. This is how this works. Well, back in the time of Ruth and Boaz and Bethlehem, that is not how it worked. What you did, if you had to have any kind of conversation with anything, with anyone about an issue such as this, what is said in the book of Ruth is Boaz went into the city and up to the gate. The gate of the city is where people congregated. It's where they met. It's where they possibly did business. And Boaz gathered up 10 elders of the city and said, come sit with me. And, again, I'm getting punch happy. Sorry. He said, come sit with me here at the gate. And they all waited until the relative who had the first right to redeem the land came through the gate. And when Boaz saw him, he called him over. Now, when he meets with this guy, they discuss the law. They talk about what the law says. And Boaz says to the first relative, "You have the right to redeem the land. It obviously has not been redeemed yet." And Boaz, in front of all the witnesses, asks him point blank, "Do you want it? Because if you don't, I do." And the man has to make a decision. Well, his first reaction was, "Yes, I do want to buy it." Then Boaz goes on to explain the rest of the story. "Well, oh, by the way, if you redeem the land, you have to marry Ruth." Well, I don't know if this guy did not want to be married. I don't know if this guy had enough wives already. But he says, "Oh, okay, I don't want to marry Ruth. Boaz, you can redeem the land." There was a custom of the day, and it was literally of the day, because by the time the book of Ruth is written, there was no longer the custom. But whenever there was a meeting such as this, and an agreement such as this made, the custom was, in front of everybody, you remove your shoe and you give it to the other person. That way, in front of everybody, they know that there is an understanding between you two. Y'all are agreeing to something, and there is the handing over symbolically of whatever was going to be agreed to be exchanged. Now remember, we are in Bethlehem. It's harvest season, and everybody's working. What you're doing handing somebody your shoe, I don't know. But if you think back about the symbology of taking your sandals on and off, what the sandals being removed represents is you lose your authority. You have no rights to something. Remember when Moses approached the burning bush and the voice of God said to Moses, "Remove your shoes because you're on holy ground." This Moses was up there on his land or his father's land. So he had authority over wherever the area was that he was in. He gets up to the burning bush. Moses says, "Take off your shoes. You have no authority here." So the removing of the shoe is a possible symbol of relinquishing your authority to the land. I don't know if we would be doing this today, but if any of y'all offered me your stinky summer sandals, I think we would say, "Let's go see a lawyer." Okay. Here's the end of the book of Ruth. Ruth and Boaz are married. Born to Boaz and Ruth is the grandfather of David, the king, through whose seed will come our Redeemer, the Christ. We don't know precisely what part we play in God's plan. But I'll submit to you, neither did Naomi. Neither did Ruth. Neither did Boaz. Nor did the first relative who had the rights to redeem the land. But make no doubt, God has a plan. What we see in Naomi is somebody who wanted to do nothing more than what God's law allowed her to do. What we see in Ruth and Boaz are someone who wanted nothing more than to do what God's law allowed them to do. But because those three chose to do, when there became a moment when there was a choice to do what God's law allowed them to do, we have a Christ. When the time comes and all is revealed, by God's grace, we get to spend time in heaven. I hope we get to consider all the fine, thin threads of events and circumstances and relationships that draw us all together as children of God. Now, I have no doubt it's going to be an amazing thing to know. But between now and that day, what we have revealed to us in the book of Ruth is what comes when having the desire to do what God wants us to do. Thank you very much.